Sermons from the Journey is the audio podcast of the weekly message preached by Reverend Becca Gorell, pastor at Lebanon United Methodist Church in Lebanon, New Hampshire, and blogging at pastorbecca.com. Thanks for listening.
Sometimes we say that the only things that are certain are death and taxes. Of course, when you read the Gospels, people were constantly asking Jesus if they should pay taxes at all, and if so, to whom. So apparently that wasn't too certain. And spoiler alert, by the end of the story, death isn't so certain either. So maybe we'll fall back a little bit and say the only thing that stays the same is change. That seems to fit a little bit more with the story of the Hebrew people, especially when we reflect that change is in some ways another word for loss. That every time something changes, something new happens, that means that something else stops happening. Something that used to be falls out of being so that something new can come into being. And part of our discomfort with change, and we're all a little discomforted by change, part of that is because it involves a loss. It involves something no longer being. And loss is definitely a constant for the Hebrew people. Loss is something throughout their history that they're very familiar with. Especially when it comes to that sense of homeland, that sense of being a people. The people of Israel and Judah throughout their history have known this constant change in leadership, which has meant a constant change, a constant loss of their own identity as people, politically, socially, spiritually. I set us up for this a little bit last week when I talked about the temple and the revival in the worship of God, the worship of Yahweh in that temple under King Josiah. So again, just a brief refresher that the temple was built not by King David, but by David's son, Solomon. And the temple was built because the people, especially David and Solomon, were longing for a temple. This was our request. They said to God, please may we build you a temple. God said to David, not yet. And then your son Solomon shall build me a temple. You see, for generations, the people, the Hebrew people, had been a wandering, nomadic tribe of people or group of tribes of people. They had no home of their own. And so finally, when they entered their promised land, their homeland, and they became established as a people in that land, they asked for a king, they asked for a civic leader, a political leader. And then they asked for a home for God. The people had a home, the people were settled in their land, but God felt unsettled. The presence of God dwelt, in their minds, wherever the Ark of the Covenant was. That was the tablets of the law and the covenant that Moses had received, and it was placed into a covenant and kind of carried around. You know, it had a tendency then to get lost. This is how it got lost, you know, Raiders of the Lost Ark. That's the Ark we're talking about. The Ark of the Covenant, this was the seat of God. And wherever this Ark went, there God's presence went, which is great if you're a nomadic people wandering through the wilderness, because you move around and your God moves around with you. But now the people had a land, and they had settled, and they wanted a God who dwelt among them. They wanted a God who had a home, and they wanted that home to be with the people. You see, folks used to go out and worship on the top of Mount Sinai, because that's where Moses heard God, or on other mountaintops scattered in the regions around them. But what would it mean for God to have a home among them? And the people longed for this, for a God who was at home among their humanity. And so they built for God a temple. God consented for the people to build for God a temple. And Solomon built this magnificent temple to God. And then, as we said last week, some time passed, 400 years passed, and during that time, 20 different rulers, some of them good and some of them not so good. When they were good, they were somewhat good, and when they were bad, it got horrible. Sometimes the leadership, sometimes the king and the leaders of the community would encourage the worship of Yahweh at this temple, and sometimes they would discourage it and encourage the worship of gods, all kinds of different gods, on the mountaintops. And then King Josiah had this revival, and the people came to hear the covenant again. And they recommitted themselves to following this God, to worshiping in this temple, to a God that was at home among the people, in the heart of their life in Jerusalem. And then some more time passed, about another 100 years after that time, and the Babylonian Empire came to power, and the Babylonians lay siege to Jerusalem. They surrounded the city, they cut it off from resources, they eventually entered the city. They killed the king. Well, eventually. They killed one young king, and then they killed a different king. They blinded him after they killed his family, and they deported him to Babylon. That wasn't enough. They tore the city down. They left it in rubble. They plundered the temple because, hey, that's where all the gold and riches and treasures are. They plundered the temple and set it ablaze. And then they took the ruling class of the people of Jerusalem and surrounds, about 10,000 people, some historical records say, and they took them with them to Babylon. This was how the Babylonians enforced their power, right? They wanted Jerusalem and Judah because it's really great land access to the Mediterranean Sea. Okay, they're over a little bit further to the east. They don't have access to the Mediterranean. This is just politics. This is just cold. We want this access, this land route. And they wanted the gold in the temple, but then to keep the people subjugated, they took the leadership, everyone, not just the kings, not just the priests, everyone who could read or write, and they brought them to Babylon with them. And so for the people brought to Babylon, they had again lost their homeland. And theirs are the only records we have because they're the ones that could read and write. The Bible tells us that only the poorest people were left in the land. And those poorest people, while they still had their land, they had no leadership in it. They had no one to say, we are a people, no religious leaders, no political leaders. And so they'd lost their sense of being a people. And all of them, whether they stayed in Judah or they were taken to Babylon, all of them had lost again their temple, had lost again that sense that God dwelt among them, that place for God to dwell. Now, we know that the building may rise and fall. That has happened here. Our sacred space has been destroyed by fire. And we know what that does. We know that pain and loss. We also know that doesn't mean that God is gone. But that center, that heart of the community, when it is lost, what a brokenness, what a punch to the gut, right? That taken away. And for the people, the Hebrew people, this was the only place. There were no other synagogues or churches or temples anywhere. This was it. This was the place where God's presence dwelt. And it was taken from them. They lost it. They had no more kings, no more rulers. Oh, they had a puppet king that the Babylonians put in, all the good that did them. They had no one to lead them in their political life, in their social life, and they had no one to lead them in their spiritual lives. All the priests and temple workers and prophets taken away, and the temple itself gone, that ark of the covenant, the covenant itself lost. But the only thing that stays the same is change. And these dynasties and empires rise and fall just as surely as buildings do, just as surely as they have throughout history. And so Babylon itself was conquered about a generation later by the good old Persians. And the Persians had a different approach. They didn't care where people lived. They didn't care who people worshipped. And so they let those folk who had been in captivity in Babylon for a generation return and go back to their homeland. That's quite a trek across the wilderness from Babylon to Jerusalem, but the people set out to return home. And it is at that moment that this portion of the book of Isaiah is written, when the people are allowed to go home. The first portion of the book of Isaiah is all that doom and gloom as the city is about to fall, and all that pain and suffering and loss after it has fallen and the temple has been destroyed. But then this chapter, chapter 40, opens with a new word, the first word, comfort. Oh, comfort my people, says your God. Your time of suffering has passed. Your punishment is gone. That is done. That chapter is closed. And now I will gather you as a shepherd and hold the sheep, the tender lambs on my lap. I will lead you and care for you and protect you. And so the people set out and they cry out for a way in the wilderness as they make their way home. They cry out, prepare God's way. Because as soon as they have their homeland or even the promise of their homeland back, that's their next question. Where will God live? Where is God's place in this wilderness as we travel from one place to another place? And where will God's place be when we return to Jerusalem and the temple is in ruins? We need to prepare in that wilderness, the wilderness of this journey and the wilderness that we will find when we arrive back home. We need to prepare a place for God, a place for God to reside with us. We are longing for a God who dwells with us. That is a constant refrain for the Hebrew people as well. It's not just the loss that happens and it comes and goes. It's that in and through all of that, they long, as we too long, for a God who will live among us, a God who is present with us. And so one of their first questions is, where will God dwell? The people will return to Jerusalem. They will rebuild the temple eventually. They will reclaim that center of their life for worship and for their socio-political lives in Jerusalem, that God dwells among us. But the longing doesn't stop. That's the interesting thing. There's a temple now, again, but the longing for God doesn't stop. And so generations pass, rulers rise and fall, dynasties come and go, Greece and Rome. And still there is a voice. Now it's John the Baptist, hearkening back, reminding people of that tradition, that longing, all the way back to the prophet Isaiah. All the way back before the first temple was built, a longing to prepare a place for God. This constant thread that runs through the history of the Hebrew people, that runs through the history of the Christian people too. A longing for God to dwell among us. The call, the reminder to prepare a place for God. Where will that place be in whatever wilderness we find ourselves in? Prepare a place in the wilderness of the journey, in the wilderness of our home, when we arrive to what we call home, but we still somehow feel apart, like feeling alone in a room full of people, like feeling distant from the presence of God, even in the midst of a sanctuary. It can happen. Prepare a place for God in the wilderness of our hearts. Prepare a place for God and that longing, that belief, that hope, that there is a God who would dwell among us. God with us. If only we had a word that captured those three, God with us. Oh, wait. There is a word for that. The word is Emmanuel. God with us. If only we had a way, if only we had a place prepared for a God who would dwell among us. This is a constant longing in the human heart for a God that would come close to us, not on some distant mountaintop, not even necessarily in a special temple or building or place, but a God who dwells in the wilderness of our hearts, a God who dwells with us as one of us, who knows the human condition, who knows what it is to suffer, to lose, to go through change, to watch leaders rise and fall and yet still try to hold fast, a God who is one of us. And so John the Baptist cries out in the same voice that Isaiah cried out in, John the Baptist cries out with the same longing, oh, for a God who is with us. And there is a constant through the long tradition of our faith, the longing for God with us. And there is one more thing that is even more constant than that, even more constant than our longing For a God with us is the God who is Emmanuel, God with us. Not in a temple we make, not in one particular place. A God who dwells with us, a God who knows, who takes on humanity, that is God with us. A God whom even death cannot destroy, that is God with us. When we say, O come, Emmanuel, we are not only asking, we are affirming that our constant longing for God with us is fulfilled. God is with us. God has been born among us. God is coming among us. O come, God with us, Emmanuel. Amen.